Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello and welcome to the Intelligent Design the Future podcast. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting from Seattle, Washington with the Discovery Institute. We have on the show today, once again with us, Dr. Donald E. Johnson, author of the recent book, Probability's Nature and Nature's Probability. As we talked about in the previous podcast, Dr. Johnson holds PhDs in Computer and Information Sciences from the University of Minnesota and another PhD in Chemistry from Michigan State University. Today, he's mostly retired, but he spends a lot of time writing and giving presentations on intelligent design. And of course, the book that we're talking about today is his new book, Probability's Nature and Nature's Probability. In the previous podcast, we talked quite a bit about Dr. Johnson's journey from being basically an evolutionist, especially one who supported the chemical origin of life, the standard story of molecules to man, and how he became a skeptic of the chemical origin of life and also a Darwin skeptic. So Dr. Johnson, it's great to have you back on the show with us today to talk more about your book.
Thank you.
Again, I wanted to have you on the show to talk about your new book, Probability's Nature and Nature's Probability, which I read and reviewed on Evolution News, and was very wonderful to see how good you are at communicating many of the technical aspects of intelligent design in a very easy-to-understand form that is very, very well-referenced. So in the last podcast, we kind of ran out of time to talk about your book, so I'd like to talk about it a little bit more in this podcast. But tell us about your book, and why did you write Probability's Nature and Nature's Probability?
Well, I wrote it basically to counteract a lot of the unwarranted speculation that is going around out there, that the things that are really pseudoscience. The book is subtitled A Call to Scientific Integrity, and so many things that are just so infeasibly low probability that I thought I should counteract some of those things that are out there that are widely distributed as being truth. And so the book is written basically to show that that's not the case, and that intelligent design is a lot better explanation for the things that we see than undirected naturalism. People who have the science, things that are presented as science, need to realize that when people use the word possible, it has a scientific meaning within the nature of probability. It means non-zero probability. And that should only be used when non-zero probability has been proven, and people use it all the time. It's possible that life arose from non-life by some mechanism. Well, you haven't ever proven that it is possible, and so you can't really say that. So I'm trying to get people to realize what it means to be possible.
Dr. Johnson, I can say that what I often hear in this debate is people will come trying to make a case for Darwinian evolution or for the chemical origin of life, and they kind of just refer and appeal to vague and unending periods of time as if that sort of solves any problems related to probabilities. And one of the points that I often make, and I thought you did a good job of bringing this out in your book, is that we need to assess the probabilities and not just assume that given unending vast periods of time that can solve any probabilistic problem. We have to really assess the probabilistic resources and ask whether a given event is actually possible or probable to happen given the probabilistic resources. Could you comment on that a little bit?
Yes. First of all, if something is impossible, it doesn't matter how many trials you have, it still is impossible. If it's very, very improbable, you have to look at whether or not it really is feasible as to whether or not it could happen within the reasonable time of the universe's age. And if the probability of calculations indicate that it really is infeasible, then to persist in treating that path as being something that's pertinent is really very non-scientific. And that's basically what's happening.
Dr. Johnson, what do you feel is the strongest piece of scientific evidence in favor of intelligent design?
I think the strongest evidence is information. I work with information all the time. One of the things that is often misunderstood is that information doesn't depend on the complexity of the information pattern, the pattern of data, but information requires, for there to be a transfer of information, it requires a sender of the information and a receiver of the information, and both of them have to agree on the protocol. So, for example, if DNA mutates, unless there is a similar mutation or something that would actually use that mutation, the mutation would be totally useless. Life, for example, looking at it from the computer information perspective, you have multiple operating systems in play, in the DNA, in the ribosomes, in the enzymes, over 2,000 enzymes that are in operation. Each of them really is a computer. And they are communicating with one another, and they're taking information that's being transferred about, and they have to be able to use that information. And the only way they can use that information is if they already know how to use it. It's not something that you pick up. If you just threw DNA into a pool of amino acids, for example, nothing would happen because there's no enzymes there, enzyme computers there to process that information. So that's one of the strongest evidences from my perspective as an information scientist that there has to be some source of information. And in all of history of computers, there has never been a known case of information arising by natural processes. It always involves some intellectual development that creates the information. Now, people say, well, it happened in life. Well, they're making that statement, that assumption, but they can't prove that because if it were true, that would be the only case that's known. Let's put it that way.
So in your experience as an information scientist, you don't know of any example where a new source of, you know, as ID theorists would call it, complex and specified information traces back to a blind and unguided natural or mechanistic process.
That is true. That is accurate. In fact, the complex and specified information is important for detectability, but actually from an information perspective, even a single bit of information requires a sender and receiver. For example, I point out in the book that the 1F by land and 2F by sea, that's a single binary bit of information that is transferred by two unary objects, lanterns in this case. But the protocol had to be known by both sender and receiver for that one bit of information to be transferred. Now, you couldn't detect that unless you knew about it. You wouldn't be able to detect that that was information. And similarly, the complexity of information is important for detecting something that we really don't know about yet. But actually, the information itself cannot arise, even a single bit of information cannot arise by itself as information. You can generate data, but not information.
Dr. Johnson, I'd like to ask you a question about when you actually wrote the book. What was your favorite part of the book to write?
I have a couple of different parts that were kind of fun. I worked in my PhD research for computer information sciences. I worked with multiprocessor communication and interactions and things. And so that was a really interesting part to see how the information gets transferred around between the various multi-computer systems within life. One of the things I point out in the book, that the junk DNA with the repetitive structures and so forth, that to me as an information scientist would say, well, there must be some purpose in that, rather than simply dismissing it as junk DNA that was done for more than 20 years. And because I've done computer programming, for example, where I had to access the memory serially. And that's basically what happens with access when the enzymes access the DNA memory. They have to do it serially. And so if they have to do the same thing over and over again, those codes would be repeated in the DNA. And so the idea that that would open up some new areas of research, and rather than simply dismissing things as junk, like so often is done, or evolutionary byproducts, there must be a purpose for it. And I could see that as being a real strong point for intelligent design.
Dr. Johnson's book, again, is Probability's Nature and Nature's Probability. It's an excellent introduction to the topic of intelligent design. It really explains a lot of the complex and technical ideas of intelligent design thinking in very easy to understand terms that would be accessible by most readers. So, Dr. Johnson, I want to shift gears a little bit as we close up this interview. You having spent much of your career in academia, what advice would you give to a student today who is studying science in undergraduate or graduate school, who is pro-ID and is considering a career in the sciences? What would you tell them as far as how they should handle their views with respect to this issue?
Well, that really depends a lot on the receptiveness that might be around where they are, because so many people have just got basically, even, you know, careers have been ruined and other things. And so for a scientist, it's a big step to make known their intelligent design support. On the other hand, There are some cases where students, for example, have been able to hold their professors accountable for what they say, so that when unsubstantiated claims are met, that the professor, after being confronted a couple of times with and asked to justify an unsubstantiated claim, the professor stops making those claims. And whether or not that's going to cause the student to be successful or not is a big question. And I really don't know if a person can basically antagonize a professor and still end up getting good grades and good recommendations and so forth.
Well, I think, you know, you speaking as a former professor, that's very interesting to hear that if a student challenges the professor about an unsubstantiated change, that can actually impact, you know, the professor's teaching. Of course, we would recommend that if you're going to ask hard questions, always do it in a respectful fashion and do it in a timely and respectful way. And it, as you mentioned, you know, it's important to think about what will be the repercussions to your grade as well. But there's a time and place to stand up, though. And if you feel like that's what needs to be said and that's the right thing to do, then of course, I think that any professor should welcome respectful and timely questions that even might challenge what they're saying. So, Dr. Johnson, I really want to thank you for your time. The book, again, is Probability's Nature and Nature's Probability, A Call to Scientific Integrity by Dr. Donald E. Johnson. Dr. Johnson, your website is scientificintegrity.com. And is it true that if people want to contact you there, they can find you through the website?
Yeah, that would be fine. That has the email address. It has contact information. There are some excerpts from the book there. There are some endorsements from various scientists and non-scientists as well. And there's a more detailed description of each of the chapters in the book as well. So people can get a good idea of what the book is about there and some of the other possibilities. If somebody wants to set up an ID debate, for example, I've done those kinds of things where or presentations as well. So.
Well, that's great, Dr. Johnson. So check out his website, scienceintegrity.com. Dr. Johnson resides in Wilmington, North Carolina, and definitely check out his book. Again, it's Probability's Nature and Nature's Probability. Thanks again, Dr. Johnson, for being on the show with us.
Well, thank you, Casey, for having me.
I'm Casey Luskin with the ID of the Future podcast. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute, 2008. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.